When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Another world, another time, in the age of wonder.
There was once a dream, you could only whisper it. Anything more than a whisper, and it would vanish.
A battle between good and evil.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Where shall I find a new adversary so close to my own level?
Try the local sewer.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
The Avengers, Earth's mightiest heroes.
Peace means having a bigger stick than the other guy.
One of these days, I'm gonna have a stick of my own.
I'm Groot.
Welcome to the Neverland Podcast. The podcast for lovers of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
Please welcome your host, Jeremy.
I thought he'd be taller.
Yeah, I can fly.
All it takes is faith. Trust.
Well, if it isn't the Star Spangled Man with a plan, what is your plan today?
Up to Neverland!
Take your pixie out of your pockets, sprinkle that pixie dust around, and think up that happiest thought, because it's time to go to Neverland again, and we are going. I don't know if you've looked at your phone or wherever you're listening on. This is the 300th time. Well, if you don't count like special episodes I did back, maybe first season, like during Star Wars Celebration, I think I had a midweek and I would do like a 0.5 or whatever. So if you don't count those, then this is the 300th episode of the Neverland Podcast. And I wanted to do something special, and I racked my brains on a few different things. And the main things I could think of was back when we did episode 100, I spent weeks collecting clips from all 100 episodes. Well, of course, the 100th episode would have audio from that very episode. But I got a collection of clips from the first few seasons. And then because Dark Crystal Age of Resistance has come on Netflix this week, I thought it'd be fun to go and revisit the interview with Mike Quinn, where we talked about his work on the Dark Crystal film. So basically, this is a clip show. And I've put it all together. I hope you're going to enjoy it. I didn't really have time to put together anything else for the show because this is Labor Day weekend, and it's also my wife's 40th birthday, so I wanted to have time to spend with her. But I thought, you know what? A great clip show would make a fun 300th episode, and I'm probably going to do the really big episode when we end our sixth season here in just a couple of months, and we'll celebrate 6 years of Neverland to Disney and beyond. But now, here is a collection of clips. Enjoy. One of the number one things that for people who are my age and even maybe a little older, maybe a little younger, the number one thing we're going to remember is a sound effect that would come on CBS whenever there was a great holiday special coming up. And it went a little something like this. Okay, so then when you'd hear that, you knew something cool was about to happen.
Hi, I'm Everett, and I got a little bit of a story to tell that when I was a child, I was really very sickly, and it meant so much to me that my family did show so much concern, and I remember I had uncles and aunts and cousins just coming to my house all the time and bringing me presents and food and cheering me up, and I'm just saying it's wonderful to have a family that's caring, but it's even more blessed when you have a family that's like the family of God, and that's how I'm happy to have both.
That's one of my favorite memories is whenever I was 11 years old, we did this thing called the Christian's Christmas Carol.
Yeah, we kind of got bored with doing the nativity the same way every time. So
yeah,
tried
maybe I was 12. I'm trying to remember what year.
Oh, it was a long time ago.
The first time I wrote it all out, and I still did teach it once in a while. But it was called the Christian's Christmas Carol. I played Bob Cratchit on the first one, and we had some other fella who was just visiting for a while who played Scrooge. But my favorite memory of that one was that Jeremy played Tiny Tim.
And I was tall, skinny, weird, wiry kid at the time. I was, I was skeletal.
What cracked me up was I had no idea how you're going to be dressed and can your turn to come out.
Because it said in the script to come out in pajamas, and what I was wearing for pajamas at the time, because it was cold, was a pair of white long johns.
He comes walking out, and the whole church bursted out in laughter.
It was great.
It was funny.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Memorable.
Oh, yeah, because it was pretty much like I came out wearing white tight. All right, so the second movie we saw was Saving Mr. Banks. This was very good. It has some moments of a little bit of levity, and it is fun watching some of the details. If you've heard in the stories of the making of it, like I have, it's fun watching it kind of brought to life. But it's a very good story, and I know you liked it because you cried.
Yeah, it was very dramatic, especially with there towards the end.
But James Avery was the Junkyard Dog on that. But for cartoons, there's a lot of other cartoons that he voiced. But for the one we're all going to remember the most, it's definitely going to have to be this one right here.
But you may call me the Shredder.
That's right. He was on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. As the Shredder. Today, we are one of many days that we're going to be able to talk about Star Wars. I say this will be the first of many times because, let's face it, this was a big part of our childhood, if you're my age, or even older than me, it's going to be a big part of your childhood, and even younger than me, this is still a big part of your childhood. So we have to be able to talk about Star Wars anytime that we feel like it. Charles in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Baio.
Yeah.
From the really awful spinoff from Happy Days, Joni Loves Chachi.
Well, he was on Happy Days for a long time.
Right, too. He was on Happy Days, but Happy Days was falling apart, I think, to me. When you took Ron Howard out there without Richie, it wasn't the same.
When he first showed up, Richie was still there, but yeah, right. It was. It didn't take long for it to fall apart.
And became the Fonzie show, and you know, I loved Henry Winkler and Fonzie.
Still do, yeah.
But you can't base the whole show around him. That'd be like turning Family Matters completely into the Urkel show. Oh, that's right, they did, and it tanked.
You know, we had a few, and I really loved my ponies, and I got into them at the beginning of it, in the really early 80s, before later on when they had lots of different varieties of ponies, you know, ponies that had fuzzy little plush, you know, attached to them, or sprinkles, or, you know, lots of other little different things, little jewels and stuff that they would have attached to them.
Some other news that I find to be very interesting. I'm not sure what to think of this one. I'm kind of hoping it does come to fruition. But since Disney does have ownership of all of Lucasfilm now, there are reports that Pixar is looking to make a Star Wars spinoff film. There was a while back when Pixar story supervisor Kelsey Mann had said that he would love to do a Star Wars spinoff centered around Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon. Don't know if that's what we might possibly expect. Pixar, sometimes does original things, sometimes doing not so original. There's a lot of sequels that they've done, and most people seem to like it when they do something original. But I'm very excited about the possibilities of having, you know, say, John Lasseter and Andrew Staten and maybe even Brad Bird kind of collaborating on creating a Star Wars film. Now, tell me that wasn't fantastically cheesy and fantastically awesome. I really enjoy listening to that. It is so off-the-wall fun. I mean, really, the old Masters of the Universe television series that we all watched was pretty goofy and cheesy and crazy with their moral lessons at the end. But we love it anyway. And boy, I tell you what, these audio recordings of these books really take the cake and really take me back. I mean, boy, He-Man was just the greatest toy you could have next to Star Wars.
I know there is a God, and that he hates injustice and slavery. I see the storm coming. I know his hand is in it. If he has a place, work for me. And I think he has. I believe I'm ready. I am nothing. But truth is everything. And with God's help, I shall not fail.
It's Thundercats related, so everybody get excited right now.
Thunder! 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 Thundercats! Ho!
Oh!
Okay, now if that didn't bring back any memories for you, then you either were too young or you never watched it. Hey, now for all of you that were fans of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, this is kind of a rare bit because I think here in the States, probably most people maybe might be familiar with the movie, then other people will be familiar with the books, but how many of those people also are familiar with the fact that there was a radio show in the UK that all of this came from, that the author of the books actually was doing this radio show? And so here's a little song by the actual voice of Marvin the Paranoid Android. I have no idea who the guy's name is, but it's a little cute song called Marvin, I Love You.
Amazon is fed by waterfalls, like right here. This is called Inspiration Falls. Because people always ask us, well, why is it called Inspiration Falls? Would you like to know why?
Yes.
Thank you for asking. That's so nice of you. As you watch this water go gently tumbling over the rocks, it inspires you to go deeper and deeper into the jungle.
This is the story of Raiders of the Lost Ark. You can read along with me in your book. You will know it is time to turn the page when you hear the bullwhip crack like this.
But the quite big question I want to ask and have some answers to is, who is your favorite Muppet and why?
Oh, now, okay. Well, I don't know. I have lots of favorites, but probably some of the ones that I like the most. I have a feeling for Beaker, because he's that science nerdy kind of guy, and he's always kind of the guinea pig for Bunsen. And but I also like the Swedish Chef.
From billion-dollar blockbuster films to TV, home entertainment, video games, and consumer products, The Dark Knight continues to resonate with audiences worldwide and rightfully deserves his place as a global pop culture icon for the ages. Batman is the single most successful superhero film franchise in history, and there have been more theatrical movies released based on Batman than any other comic book character. In video games, the Batman Arkham franchise is also the most successful superhero game concept ever. Batman consistently breaks records in every incarnation of his character and remains the gold standard by which all other comic book sales are measured. I have heard that in some reviews that they're calling this is like, instead of a superhero movie, this is more like a spy thriller. But to me, that's kind of a lot of what Captain America does these days. It was very much like a spy thriller. It was very cool. Had a lot of good twists and turns. A lot of different things going on. You know, actually a lot of pretty good humor. Very good acting by a lot of the characters. Now, I should have probably brought up a list of who all played who on there. The man they got to cast as Sam Wilson, also known as the Falcon, he was excellent. They did a very good job of introducing Sam Wilson to you and letting you start to like the character before he even gets his flight suit going, and then you're just excited to see him flying around and helping Cap out.
Fly in comfort. Than normal that have even more fear than you. Or do you, Hulk Hogan? Kick the doors out. Kick the cockpit door down. Take the two pilots that have already made the sacrifice, so that you can face this challenge. Dispose of them, Hulk Hogan. Assume the controls, Hulk Hogan. Jump that control into a nosedive, Hulk Hogan.
Well, I remember being a big fan of Steven Spielberg's films, and I'm still a big fan, whether it be Close Encounters or Jaws or any of Jones. Well, I remember on my sixth birthday, I got to make a choice. I could either go see Raiders of the Lost Ark again for like the fifth or sixth time, or we could go see E.T., you know, as a family. So I'll never forget it. That was a good day for me. I remember my toy still. I remember getting a Lone Ranger and a silver toy. I remember going to Godfather's Pizza, and I remember going to see E.T., and boy, I just fell in love with the movie. And I remember that Christmas Santa Claus brought me a toy of E.T. that came with a little miniature toy of the Simon Says Speak and Spell.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
I got a whole huge bag of my very own of Reese's Pieces.
Okay, so that sound is from a 1918 carousel. In 1918, former cabinet maker Marcus L. Illions meticulously carved 64 jumping horses and two chariots to create the Illions Supreme Carousel, one of the most famous and reproduced carousels in the world. Known for all their wood horses with high swept manes adorned with jewels, and only five original Supreme models were ever built by Illions. Now installed at Worlds of Fun, the 90-foot carousel is one of only two operating in the world. And it's kind of nice we have it. It's a very big, nice carousel that actually plays music the old-fashioned way, and I always love swinging by it, and I usually give it a ride every time I come by. Okay, so now we're here with Philip and Seth, and we can get their kind of thoughts on the Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Well, it wasn't necessarily amazing, in my opinion.
it's actually what a critic said.
Yeah,
this was not amazing.
But I don't know. There's parts of it I thought were okay, and I really liked his outfit a lot better than this, and any of the other ones that have been made. But I don't know. I was a little disappointed in it, but for the most part, I don't know, maybe I'm outgrowing the comic book movies, but I doubt it because I still love Captain America, you know, so.
Not every company's doing them as well as Disney is right now.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. And I loved Avengers and all that, so.
Yeah.
In this one, I thought the tone of it was back and forth and was kind of undecisive if it was a comedy or if it was serious or whatever. So at the end of it, I liked it, that part of it, but for the most part, I thought it could have been better, but it also could be worse, I guess.
But getting together with and making new friends is what podcasting's greatest benefit is. And the fact that I've got, you know, 30 to 50,000 people that listen to the show each and every month, and that some of these people contact me, and some of these people come out to the park, and when they come out to the park, they know that on Friday afternoons between 5 and 7, I'm out at Trader Sam's every single week. So they know that they can come over, meet me, and say hi. And they get to meet me, but more importantly, I get to meet them.
Yeah.
And there's just so much fun to meet all of these people, especially the people who are like longtime listeners who know you better than you know yourself.
Oh, yeah. Whenever we were kids, there was two times. Once a year, Channel 5 would do Monster Week, where every afternoon they would show a different monster. It could be Gamera, Godzilla, King Kong, you know, something. Mm-hmm. Oh, we look forward to it all year. And during the summer, up at Metro North Theater, they would have their dollar matinees.
Yeah.
Mom would take us to see that. And a lot of them was Godzilla, Gamera, yeah. The Gargantuas. I don't know. I remember we'd always ask Mom, is there a monster in it? Whenever we were going to see it. Like Sinbad, Eye of the Tiger, and the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad and all them. And
I don't think I saw that.
What was it? Mysterious Island and The Land That Time Forgot and Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Okay, so there it was back in 1991. I first saw the six-player stand-up of X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it played kind of like the, you know, we were already big fans of the Ninja Turtle game. So when I saw the thing, I was like, it's like the Ninja Turtles, only it's these X-Men people that I didn't really know anything about. Now, I had heard some stuff before because there had been people who talked about Pride of the X-Men, which mm-hmm. I had not at this time. I'll have to share that theme here in a little bit, which I did not see because I didn't know who they were. But you saw the first run of that, right?
Yes, I did. It was in the 80s. I remember I was sick on a Sunday morning, and Warner Brothers used to have this Sunday morning show.
Hanna-Barbera?
Did I say Warner Brothers?
Yeah, you said Warner Brothers.
I'm sorry, Hanna-Barbera.
Now, granted, you know, Hanna-Barbera has been bought out by Warner Brothers.
Yeah, but, so that's kind of ironic.
But it hadn't happened, I don't think, at that time.
But anyway, there was cartoons where they used to have, like, Paw Bears and Yogi
Paw
Bear.
Paw Bears.
Yeah. And then, but anyway, they had, sometimes they show Spider-Man stuff. And on this time, they showed the X-Men cartoon, and I thought it was awesome.
Pride of the X-Men. Let's go ahead and play that theme right now. Why not?
Well, there's two things I wanted to say. First, when you first started talking about alien symbiotes, you know, the first thought that I had of was the movie Alien and the chest huggers and everything, or the chest bursters and everything. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, that's a good one, but no, where you went was better. And I like the fact that you just kind of glassed over Spider-Man 3. And didn't really that too much.
Yeah, that was not a good representation of Venom at all. Khan had actually like conquered the world before
the eugenics wars.
The eugenics wars, where they'd actually made these race of supermen who are super intelligent and super strong and everything. And but all these great scenes, this interactions between Khan and the nurse.
where she's kind of attracted to him as his power, and she's always been into powerful kind of somewhat evil men, you know. And so she's very attracted to Khan, but he's got these great lines too. It's like, stay or go, but whatever you do, do what you choose to do. And just great, ridiculous dialogue that they gave him. But, you know, it's weird to think that he had one episode of Star Trek, and then probably still the greatest Star Trek movie that's ever going to be made, although I've loved most of them. But the greatest one is still going to be The Wrath of Khan.
I was in The Smurfs, but I played Denisa, who was Gargamel's niece. So Paul Winchell's niece, his bratty niece.
Paul Winchell was Gargamel?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's not the only time you work with Paul Winchell, because if we hop up ahead to The Gummy Bears.
Yes.
You had Paul Winchell in there, was Zummy Gummy, and then you were Sunny Gummy.
I played Sunny Gummy. Ta-da! How do I look?
Which was one of my favorite shows when I was younger. I loved The Gummy Bears.
Aw, thank you. I appreciate that.
You had a lot of great familiar voices, because even, Alonzo Music, I always get the first name wrong.
Lorenzo Music.
Lorenzo Music. There,
Bill Scott, Rocky, mm-hmm. Rocky and Bullwinkle fame.
Yeah.
He was Bullwinkle. And June Foray, who played Rocky, was also, she played Grammy Gummy.
Yes. But I thought we would just have some fun and listen to some different kind of music. Some of it going to be comical. Some of it going to be kind of maybe from a superhero TV show or movie or something like that. Either way, I think we're going to have just a lot of fun. And we may just do this every once in a while just to kind of, sit around and listen to some fun music and have a good time. So without further ado, let's just get going with it. I am currently pulling out of the parking lot from the movieplex, whatever you want to call it, just came out of Transformers Age of Extinction, the fourth in this franchise. This is supposed to be the beginning of a new trilogy. They're kind of trying to relaunch things, apparently, with a new cast of humans and some different perspective, although they have kept in mind everything that has happened in the previous three films. I gotta say, we love our country of America because we do have these rights and freedoms, and that's kind of also central to what we feel like in Neverland. We have the right to pursue what makes us happy and what we dream of, and we just got to keep going even when we get knocked down. We have that right, we have that freedom, and we got to take advantage of it.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look out.
Our next one comes again from Marvel, and this is actually very big news. Just recently, Marvel announced that their first Star Wars publication since the Walt Disney Pictures Studio purchased Lucasfilm in 2012. Star Wars, the original Marvel Years omnibus, is coming to shelves early next year.
Oh yeah, he had pictures and magazines that had covers and stuff from it.
And I think maybe even some...
he had toys from it as well.
I was thinking concept art or cells.
Yeah, I think he had some cells too.
Oh, he had some character sketches of several of the villains. I remember Solomon Grundy and Scarecrow, I think.
Oh, yeah, there was a couple of different versions of Scarecrow, because that when he made his first appearance, he was a bit more kind of realistic and very kind of creepy, kind of skinny Scarecrow, and then later on they gave him this weird big mouth thing, and which was still kind of creepy, but I think they were trying to calm it down, because in the first appearance of him, he was so scary and creepy, I bet some of the kids were a little freaked out of Scarecrow. Y'all got anything you want to throw in about Guardians of the Galaxy you thought was cool?
Ladies first, go ahead.
Spoiling?
I was going to say, I am Groot. I love Groot. Groot was great.
Me too. I loved Groot. Actually, I loved every character in there. I love Rocket.
Yeah.
I loved Drax. Truth is, I did not expect to enjoy this film, really. A couple months ago when I saw the previews, I thought, it looked okay. But within the last 2 or 3 weeks, it started looking better and better. And I loved it, went out and seen it twice already.
Obviously, you liked
it. I was
it.
Very, very impressed with Dave Bautista, because I'm a WWE nut, and the truth is I haven't been a huge fan of his as a wrestler, but I am a huge fan of his in this film, so I wish he was as cool like this in the wrestling.
And Michelangelo, I think, is the character that seems to have changed the most, with yet still keeping the same charm that he's always had, but always they always seem to do a slightly different take on how they want to voice him.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always fun.
Yeah, somebody said to me down at Comic-Con that we were talking, and he said, so did you have anything to do with the movie that's coming out in a couple weeks? And I said, no, the Michael Bay one? No, I mean, I haven't had anything to do with anything Ninja Turtles other than the series that I did, you know, for those 10 seasons. And he said, gosh, I don't understand that. I mean, not as one of the voices, but it would have been hilarious, like, to, you know, pull you in, you know, as an ancillary character or, a waiter in a restaurant or something. You know, just as like a little Easter egg. And I thought that would have been hilarious. That would have been fun to do.
And this isn't something I have never experienced before because I've never seen Cars Land before. But every night at dusk, they play the song Life Could Be a Dream.
Shaboom, shaboom.
Exactly.
Shaboom, shaboom.
And then the neon lights come on.
They turn on all the neon lights. And it's beautiful.
It was so much that it inspired you to dance with some guy named Brian.
Yes. Well, Laura held a contest to see who could do the best performance to the song. And a lot of our podcasting friends are couples like Scott and Tracy.
Yep, saw them dancing as well.
Sarah and Richard.
I don't think they were on the video that I saw.
They were there. Unfortunately, I had to grab whoever was nearby, and I want a recount.
Like, you'll have the family of blood, or human nature and the family of blood, those two go together. Those were David Tennant ones, where he was human for a bit, and those are really good. But originally, it was a children's series that was supposed to teach about history, and they've retweaked it a bit, but... So the monsters, it's never really too scary for children, supposedly. But yeah, some of the newer ones, I think, are a little frightening.
Yeah, they're just that frightening visage and the way, like, the silence would be there and then they weren't there.
Yeah. Or, you know, now my daughter, who's 18 years old, is scared of the angel in my grandma's front yard.
We expected some characters to make appearances, but I had a list of different characters that I would kind of like to see pop up, like maybe see Vader do something a little bit, or maybe even the Emperor, perhaps even Grand Moff Tarkin maybe makes an appearance.
I'm sure they're going to follow that same Marvel Comics series that we had in the 70s and 80s, where Vader wasn't always the villain of the issue, but we'd see him rolling in and out every couple of episodes, issues rather. And I'm sure we're going to see him a couple times a season, just maybe giving the Inquisitor some direction or him having to take action into his own hands. I hope we don't see too much of him because this is not really his story.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to overuse him.
Right.
And I would like to see Tarkin. I don't want to see the Emperor just because in Star Wars we never saw the Emperor.
That's true.
He was in his throne room or wherever he was and just being guarded by himself.
Yeah.
And I don't really think until Return of the Jedi where he had to come out and talk to Vader one-on-one that he did. I think he was very, very secluded.
There was a man who went a little overboard judging comic books, and some of it is some people did go too far. You had a lot of your Tales of the Crypt type things, and they go a little too far. But because of that, this man decided that Batman and Robin were a way to commercial a different lifestyle. And
it was a bad influence to have like a young boy who was going and putting himself in danger and always running around with an older man, looked creepy and weird.
And so they had stuff like that basically now comic books have become the enemy.
Hey, where are all my comic books?
Oh, those dreadful things.
I gave those away.
And there were thousands of comics that were burnt.
Yeah. Well, this happened later than what I was about to bring up.
But, well, in the 50s this happened.
But it really also took in the 60s and made some 60s comics rare as well.
That was later, but this first happened in the 50s, and then they burnt a whole bunch of comics.
Yeah.
But which is funny, because the people who kept their comics, like the Superman and Batman and stuff, they're now worth a lot more money.
Yes, because it's rare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had Walt Disney came back in 1956. He'd been a little busy in 55 opening Disneyland and doing the movie Lady and the Tramp. And so in 1956, we decided to build a public pool here, which was pretty darn progressive for a little town of less than 3,000 in the middle of the 1950s to have a public pool. So they passed the bond and started building the pool. And they go, what are we going to call it? Let's write Walt Disney a letter and see if it would be okay if we named it Walt Disney Swimming Pool and Park, just hoping he'd say, go ahead. First letter back was he was thrilled. Next letter back was, we going to have a dedication? Well, we sure could. Lafisha would like to come, and Roy'd like to come, and they'd like to bring their wives. So in 1956, Walt came back to dedicate the swimming pool and park.
Well, when Walt Disney came to dedicate a pool in 56, we still use it today. He came back in 1960 to dedicate our new school. The one he went to was Park School. But, of course, that was torn down, and we built a new Walt Disney School. When he came for that dedication, he gave us that flagpole. That's my husband standing to the right of it and Walt to the left. And that flagpole came... from the Squaw Valley Olympics.
Kay mentioned something about that. Yeah.
He had been chairman of pageantry and sent us the tallest pole, which is still out here in the lawn of our school.
It's more of a contemporary Fantasia.
Yeah, because it is. There's a lot of great music in there.
The entire film was based on music like Fantasia was. But it's more contemporary stories, more contemporary animation than Fantasia was. It's not just classical music, but it's more of what would have been pop in 1948.
Yeah. And it's hard to not walk away after watching Johnny Appleseed singing along some of the tunes on there. I always get, the Lord is good to me, so I will thank the Lord for giving me the things I need, the sun above and my appleseed, something like that. Yeah, it's a fun little song and lots of good kind of toe-tapping kind of things that'll kind of get stuck in your head. And boy, if I could find a soundtrack for Melody Time, I'd be happy. Or even Fun and Fancy Free, because there's a lot of good stuff in there. You know, these are almost like forgotten treasures that are not as nice to, you know, as people, because it's not a full Cinderella fairy tale, and or which those are, of course, great. We do love those. But these are classic films as well.
Frau Blücher.
Exactly.
Because it wasn't until like we'd seen it together, you know, that I really was able to see the first part of it.
Really?
Yes. I caught the end on one evening or Saturday morning or whatever, and it scared me because you got the flying pumpkin coming at you, and I thought, man, this is a scary, you know, a scary one.
Yeah. Well, so at least I'm not alone. See, in second grade, we watched it in school and freaked me out.
So, the Hitchhiking Ghost came in, and which was amazing, and they sang songs to us. They sang Grim Grinning Ghosts. And then Beauregard, our butler, would come in and chase them away. I'm trying to think what else. So then we would also have April come in. April was the girl with the trapeze artist, the ballerina with the parasol.
Yeah, what we learned is that her backline story is her family worked in the circus, and they were part of a trapeze act, and she walked the tightrope.
Castlevania 2 on the original NES I thought was fantastic. It had some like light role playing elements to it, where you had to go from town to town, and it had some fetch quests in it, and so that the fetch quests go back 25 years, sad to say, but it was pretty good game. And then it kind of went in the series went downhill quickly for a while, but then it peaked back up on the original PlayStation with Symphony of the Night, which was just fantastic.
Brilliant, brilliant game. Of course, I gotta say, I liked Castlevania 3, though. I did like that one. I played the Dickens out of that thing. And that was, I think, one of the first attempts to really kind of almost make a cinematic experience out of a game, because even the opening credit title screen had like film strip things going up the side, and you had like a good long shot of the castle and things like that. And it seemed like they really were stepping up to make a cinematic experience that really, when they got to Symphony of the Night, it's very cinematic with the opening and coming looking at the castle, and the storytelling is done brilliantly. The graphics were fantastic for the time. Oh, and the music is awesome in that game too.
Well, the music in Castlevania, pretty much across the board, has always been good. And the game I was talking about was Lords of Shadow. For some reason, that just escaped me. But Castlevania Lords of Shadow, I thought was really, really good.
Boy, every time you mention some of these serials, I'm like, oh, I remember that stuff. It was so good.
Some of them are better remembered than eaten.
Yeah, like the monster cereals. I started eating those like a year ago, and I managed to even find it because they re-released Fruit Brute and everything.
Yes.
And I was just eating it, good, having a good time, and then I had to do an A1C, and my blood sugar was way too high, and I got a good scolding. So I looked at buying some this year, and my wife says, no, you aren't.
Not again. Not again.
So there's season 3A was all about Neverland, and it was an 11-week run, and then they had a hiatus for like 3 months, 3 or 4 months.
Well, in 1945, the Macy's Day Parade surpassed 2 million people in attendance.
Wow.
So it was growing. 6 days after the, this is sad, 6 days after the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade went ahead as scheduled in hopes of raising the national spirit. Now, we actually just had the anniversary of his assassination just this past week, but that's a sad thing. We don't want to talk about it. We're a happy show. Oh, one of my favorite balloons, Snoopy, the Peanuts character created by Charles Schulz, holds the distinction of having the most Thanksgiving Day parade New York City parade floats with 6 different balloons since 1968.
Yeah.
I always love seeing Snoopy.
Snoopy was always the one for me. I even mentioned him in my sermon this morning. I mentioned Snoopy, you know, he's even on that movie I mentioned a while ago. Snoopy was the one to me. He's one of my favorites, you know. You got to love him. Whether he's Joe Cool or he's on the Red Baron or he just walking around being himself, you got to love the guy.
New lightsaber. I've seen a lot of joking around about the extra blades. But everybody seems to think it's kind of cool, but also it's becoming a bit of a joke. I've seen pictures where they made it look like a Swiss Army knife, or if George Lucas had done this and it had so many different extra blades sticking off,
it would have been ridiculous. Somebody had kind of made a thing. Okay, so the first trilogy, we had one blade. Second trilogy, we have two.
A dual blade.
Third trilogy, now we've got three.
Okay, well, this is 100th episode, myself, you're hearing again. That was everything from season one. But I just had to let you know that this may just be perfect for you if you are interested in podcasting yourself. Okay, my friends, and they are legends in the industry, Luis and Kamala, have a proven marketing machine designed to help you attract high-profile interview opportunities. And that's not all. Their paid-to-podcast program puts a monetization process in there that has you creating income the moment you start your podcast channel. And here's the inside scoop from your friend in the know, namely me. They launched their program earlier this year and have been getting amazing results for their clients. Paid to podcast is already considered by their clients to be the number one way to launch and monetize your podcast fast. The price is about to go up to around $15,000, which is still only a fraction of the true value of this. But get this, they wanted to show gratitude for the success this program has generated for themselves and their clients, and they really want a really exciting way to find and promote some of the best secret hidden talents waiting to be seen and heard in the market today. So they're giving away one of their paid-to-podcast programs away, totally complimentary. So that means that you could win a fully sponsored place for the paid-to-podcast program, which is currently worth $10,000. But, of course, this will be absolutely no cost to you. So if you're chosen for this scholarship, you'll get plugged into their marketing machine that positions you and has you attracting the best interviews for your podcast channel, and you don't need to have one either. They'll help you create your own niche, and all through the program, they'll be with you. And so, yes, this could be you. However, you have to be in it to win it. Now, it's super easy to win. I'm going to put a link in the podcast notes that you're seeing. If you go to neverlandpodcast.com and find the show notes for this episode, I'm going to be putting this link in the next few episodes. And you can find out about all the criteria and let them know why you would love to win. And that's it. So, since they've been telling me about this, I thought of all of you consider that you might be considering getting into podcasting, so I wanted to tell you all straight away, right here in my 100th episode. And considering, you know, that you might be considering podcasting yourself, this could be the perfect vehicle for you to take your public profile and your business to the next level. Because some people, they podcast as a business. Are you maybe thinking of, you have a business of some sort and you want to attach a podcast to it? This is a really good time to be able to step in. So once again, now remember, go to neverlandpodcast.com or look in the show notes here for this episode, and I'm going to put a link in there that you can click in and you can enter into this little contest and see if you can win this scholarship to be able to get into this program, and they'll help you get started with your new podcast. So yeah, if you're considering to do this, and believe me, it's a lot of fun. If you really have a passion for this, this is a great thing. And I bring this up mainly because through 100 episodes, I have been having a lot of fun. And as I mentioned, when I was going through and selecting these clips, all the fun things I realized I've gotten to do and all the people I've gotten to meet through doing this show has been wonderful. And knowing that you are out there and you're listening to this and that you're enjoying this and you keep coming back every week, I love that. I feel like I've got kind of a connection with, even though a lot of you I've never, you know, met or anything like that. It's really fun to know that you're there. And, you know, I get to see where downloads come from around the world. It's very, very special, and I love making this show for you. And I hope I can continue, you know, go up to another 100 episodes to 200 episodes, because I'm, like I said, I'm having a lot of fun doing this, and I love that you're listening and you're enjoying it. I'm hoping I'm making your day better every time you get to hear an episode of the Neverland Podcast. But if you're considering making a podcast yourself, like I said, go to the link that's in the show notes. But let's go listen now to season two, and here are the rest of the way up to our 100th episode. All right, now our very special content for the week, we're going to go beyond Disney, but still get a little bit of a Disney magic. I don't know if you've ever seen this movie. It's a great movie, but we're going to go back in the Neverland TARDIS now, and we're going to hear Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed, the original cast of It's a Wonderful Life, doing a radio version of that show. It's going to be great. You're going to love this. Quickly, come on, let's get in the Neverland TARDIS and go. But they had, like, trading card-style images taken from the teaser, and it reveals the names of some of those characters we saw. The woman we saw riding the, for all intents and purposes, it was like a speeder, her name is Rey, R-E-Y. Now, they say the numbers on the cards were significant. She was card number 74. There was also BB-8. That is the little droid we see on a ball. A lot of people are calling it like a soccer ball. He is card number 11, or it is card number 11. And the interesting thing I have also found is that Mark Hamill has released some in an interview talking about getting to play with the actual droid, because that is a practical effect and not a CGI effect.
Merry Christmas!
And a bah humbug to you!
That boyfriend, always so full of forgiveness and love.
Yes, he always was a little weird. I'll tell you how Christmas ought to be. Everybody ought to get up early. But not to see the presents neath the tree. If Christmas cheer they're looking for, a cup of tea's enough to pour. That's the way Christmas ought to be.
I really like the Elf King. I know he's like kind of the jerk character in it, but like...
It resolves that very well.
It does resolve that very well and kind of ties into his madness and like why he is the way that he is. And so that was nice to see.
He's a jerk for a reason.
However, I really thought like, you know, I'm watching him with like the stag and the big antlers and I'm like...
Oh, yes.
I want... I mean, if, you know, if I could be in Middle Earth, like that's what I want. I want a giant deer to ride around on.
Everybody, imagine a very large deer with moose antlers. It was flipping awesome.
It was awesome.
The ones that pop up a lot, you know, I knew about them when I was a kid, and so it was really a thrill as I'm starting to get to meet a lot of these voice actors, you know, and it's really awesome. I'm really sad I never got to meet Christine, but she sounds like a really amazing person.
The first thing I ever wrote with Carrie again was an episode of Gem and Holograms, one episode called Video Wars. and we wrote that together, and we're hoping it would lead to a whole bunch of cartoon work, and it really didn't. It led to nothing, actually. But later, years later, I went to work for Disney TV Animation and ultimately became an executive there and developed a bunch of shows, which led me to develop Gargoyles, which led me to become a producer. And I actually became a producer first and a writer second on the show.
Now, Arrow, I missed out on, as I said, I only watched like the first season. I did kind of catch, of course, when they crossed over with Flash, I had to watch that. And I did catch quite a bit of their mid-season finale. But overall, so what sort of things have happened with Arrow, and what might we hope to see coming?
Oh, are you ready for spoilers?
Be careful, be just in case. But there might be other people out there who maybe haven't watched Arrow, but maybe they've been watching The Flash and are like, geez.
Salmon ladders.
Salmon ladders.
That's the ladders. Two words for you. These are the only two words you need to go watch this show.
Black Canary. Is that what you were going to say, Emily?
No, that was definitely
Felicity.
Oh, Felicity. That's two
that's
words.
That's not two words.
It's Felicity.
Did you see the Ripped Apparel t-shirts today?
No.
There's a Felicity t-shirt there.
Oh, fantastic.
Until I was a bit older and bought a copy of The Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, the only version I had of Winnie the Pooh was The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. So I kind of got used to that and watching that all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good series.
Yeah.
Some good stories.
And really, you know, delving into like some iconic characters for Disney already with Winnie the Pooh. So I guess it was kind of a natural fit going into Tailspin. Suddenly now they've got, you know, characters from the Jungle Book and they have to have a new look and a new situation for them. Seems like you're a natural fit.
Yeah. It was those standard characters along with a whole new world of other characters.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun to work on.
Mm-hmm. And you also got to be in a movie with Christopher Walken.
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, not only did I get to be in a movie, but I got to be edited out from a movie right next to Christopher Walken.
Aladdin.
Aladdin. What a great, great movie. To the late, great Robin Williams, we love you.
We love you, brother. Too bad he's not the one who got to sing the love song in this.
No, but he did a lot of good songs himself.
He did. You know, I do have an alternative version of this song that we're about to play that I should have probably pulled out. I'll pull it out sometime. It's you would not expect. For anyone who knows who these people are, I have a copy of Mark Lowry. Well, it's a Mark Lowry concert, but he steps away. And Sandy Patty sings it with, I don't forget the guy's name. He's this tenor who used to sing with the Gaither Vocal Band.
Huh.
And they do a really nice rendition of this song, but we'll play their official Disney version right now. It's A Whole New World from Aladdin.
Wonderful.
Now, many people have already heard that Howard the Duck is making a return to the comic books. It's been a while since he's been published in his own book. He's kind of normally just pops up here and there. We all know he exists, even if we don't see him published in any fashion for a long time. Well, because everybody's talking about him again, and after Guardians of the Galaxy, he had a really great cameo being voiced by Seth Green. This might be also a hopeful that, you know, he might be popping up again in some Guardians movies. Maybe Howard will get his own movie again that will be a lot better than the previous one. Although, when I was a kid, I liked the previous movie. It was kind of fun. You watch it later, you realize it's not a great movie, but it's still fun.
As a kid, a great double feature was Howard the Duck and Little Shop of Horrors.
There you go. With Mask, Mobile Armored Strike Command.
Now, this cartoon was obviously made just for the toys.
Right.
The toys are awesome. In fact, I'm holding my Thunderhawk right now while we're talking.
Now, which one was Thunderhawk? Was that
Thunderhawk is the Camaro, yeah. That you press a button and the wings pop up. The spoiler pops up. It's got engines coming out the back. He's got a couple of bombs that release underneath it. It's Matt Tracker's Camaro, and it's awesome.
We're going to do kind of just a tribute episode to Leonard Nimoy. I have some great audio to share related to that for his role as Mr. Spock that we all know him as. Disney filed for patent on the ride system on November 16th, 1995. The Imagineers reportedly asked Harrison Ford to reprise his role as Indiana Jones, but it is unknown whether or not Ford assisted in the making of the attraction. It doesn't seem like he did. His voice is not in there. Anything I've seen, there's a, I'm going to share some audio later, where there was a special done on ABC for part of the Magical World of Disney. It was kind of a special, but you never get to see actually Indiana Jones from the front. It's always from his back. It's all in shadow. I'm sure they've modeled the figure to kind of look like Harrison Ford a little bit, but it doesn't sound like he was really that involved. But anyways, the Temple of Forbidden Eye, of course, premiered on March 3rd, and this was, of course, the day before it was open to the public, but there was invited celebrity guests were George Lucas and Michael Eisner, formerly, and of course, Disney CEO, Dan Aykroyd and Carrie Fisher. And to promote the opening of the attraction, the Disney Channel produced an hour-long TV program entitled Indiana Jones Adventure, featuring Karen Allen and John Rhys Davies reprising their roles from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Clark had a good one the last couple of weeks. He brought in a fart. Fart noise maker. And Chloe played along, so whenever he pushed the button, and she would just be like, oh my god, I'm so sorry. This is so embarrassing.
How did you guys react? What were your emotions when you, like, watched the final movie?
I was surprised that I was forced to pay to get it.
Every superhero had a bandolier or belt full of pouches. And pouches on there, like, you know, the cargo pants era.
Yeah. Yes. That way they weren't necessarily wearing tights. It's like, no, look, we have pockets and everything. Yeah.
It all started with a character called Longshot.
Yeah.
Because the artist said, well, if he's got all of this gear, where is he going to put it?
Exactly.
And it worked, you know, pouches and pockets work with Batman, but it doesn't work with every superhero.
Yeah.
And in the mid-90s, thanks to Rob Liefeld, you saw it on just about every superhero. Yeah.
I always liked how Spider-Man would sometimes, you'd see him pull up the shirt half of his tights, which you didn't realize he could do, and he would have a Spidey belt underneath, and he had a signal light there as a buckle, but he could keep his web cartridges all in these pouches on this belt.
Why did the seagulls fly over the sea?
Because if they flew over the bay, they'd be bagels. Well, why do young pirates always fail when saying the alphabet in kindergarten?
Aye, because their fathers insist they get 7 C's.
Aye, and there are 7 C's.
Arr, why is pirating addictive?
Well, they say once you lose your first hand, you get hooked. How do pirates know that they are pirates?
Are they think, therefore they are.
Oh, but Captain, you said you don't think, you must not are.
Mutiny.
It was no mutiny.
Mutiny.
It was Peg Leg Jones.
Mutiny.
His character in the characterization in the first film really was remarkable. It was so fun and quirky. I just was thrilled when I saw it in the theater. I know that guy. And about a year later, I auditioned for a commercial for Cherry Coke and got that and played a greaser, which in this Cherry Coke commercial that was based on Back to the Future. You can see it on YouTube, I think. And Victoria Jackson is the roller skating waitress or whatever. Anyway, so it was kind of ironic, you know, having this little connection there and then to get the role. On the other hand, it was odd because obviously something was not right because he wasn't returning. So I figured he had another bigger project that, you know, was more important to him and that they needed to fill his shoes. Now, originally in the script, Back to the Future 2 and 3 was one script, Paradox.
Mm-hmm.
And in part 3, the role of Seamus was to be played by Crispin.
So what inspired you to make a He-Man film?
He-Man has always been an obsession with me. It's I've loved the toys and the cartoon and everything since I can remember seeing my first episode when I was about 3. And I've always just enjoyed the characters and the stories and the entire property. And they're the only thing, the only toys that I've kept from my childhood are all the Masters of the Universe things.
Hi, my name is Beth Chalk, and I'm the creator of the Jim Henson's Labyrinth, the movie playset on Lego Ideas. I'm a stay-at-home wife now. I used to be an engineer, but I've been spending most of my time working on artistic interests and Lego Ideas, creating Lego sets as part of that.
You got a song here that's from Avengers Age of Ultron. I don't quite understand why that is.
Well, I wanted to scare everybody. I had to have a goth band come in, right?
Yes. Sure. I mean, I see I've got no strings on here.
Yes. But I'm going from Pinocchio, so hopefully it'll be a lot happier.
Okay. That version, so. Yes.
So when you were doing these auditions, was Huey Lewis sitting next to you by chance?
Yeah, he had a bullhorn, and yeah, it was not good.
Kept saying everyone was too darn loud.
Yeah, I can't help it. We can play it loud in Neverland, okay? You know, we're on an island. Who are we going to disturb? Pirates?
Some of them were already disturbed.
Yeah. But also going upon Pinocchio, this could just take the whole thing, too. When you wish upon a star. That, I mean, let's face it. That is one of those, the epitome of Disney. Everyone was going to think of that song. Because Walt had, you know, such a light and lighthearted and humorous view of the Uncle Remus stories, and so positive, he wanted a movie that depicted that positive feel. And so you have, you know, from the very start of it, here is a little boy, little white boy Johnny, who meets his you know, little, I don't remember what the other little boy's name was, you know, a little colored boy, and they just become fast friends, and they're hanging out together, and they go stare at a grandfather clock and watch it chime and stuff. And it's like, you know what? No one is making any sort of a deal or issue of anyone being a different color. They just see, look, it's another person, and oh, we're so excited to see Uncle Remus. I remember when he used to tell me stories, and oh, I want to meet Uncle Remus and hear his stories. No one cares what color they are.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I took a 10-minute break to have some Kansas City barbecue.
I got the email from Kirk with the panel list of who's going to moderate which panel. Oh, cool. I can see an email. Oh, crap. I got to do sit-ups.
The workout that you have on the show, I mean, yeah. That's got to be pretty cool. It's pretty grueling. I mean, it's like if Oliver has to know how to speak Russian, or if Oliver has to know how to shoot a bow and arrow, like all of these things are things that we build into the infrastructure of the show. And the fitness is something that we build into the infrastructure of the show. You know, I get scheduled workouts every week.
There's also appears to be no consequences for any of your actions. The main characters, basically, they steal a car. And I was like, wait, nobody reports the car stolen? Because the guy clearly saw you two. But he didn't report his truck stolen, because your truck could be obviously stand out. It's got busted glass. It's all, you know, it's banged up. But, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. If you actually start thinking during the movie, you're lost. Don't try not to think. I guess when the first time I watch it, think about it later, and then you can determine whether or not you'll actually buy this when it comes out. Because I mean, like I said, it is a lot of fun, but there's so many problems with it, and you kind of care about the characters, but the most cute story is kind of a sad little story, because Frank, played by George Clooney, they show him as a boy, and he creates a friendship and has kind of a crush on Athena, not knowing Athena is not human. She's an android or a robot, whatever, or an auto animatronic, as she refers to herself, which is cute that they did that.
You know,
I'll beat you both together. I'll fight you both apart. Is that right? Somebody said?
Yep.
Yes. Thank you. I know someone will always correct me. And then Andre has the next line. He says, I guess not very long. Like that, right? Well, he didn't get to the word long when he let out what has to be the most monumental fart. I kid you not. I'm serious. Folks, we've all experienced what we've accused people of, giant farts, I'm sure. This was a giant's fart. Okay? All right? Remember the scene in the movie where Andre says, everybody move, right? Remember that moment?
Yeah.
And then Rob Reiner cut to all the folks in the village, and they all look in shock when they hear him scream. That was the exact reaction of the entire cast and crew. I'm telling you guys, it was 15 seconds long.
Oh my goodness!
It's a long time. Don't try this at home, kids. And it, the sonic resonance of it was so monumental that I looked over at the sound guy and he lifted the headphones up.
Oh my god!
And then I looked up at Andre and he had steam coming out of the top of his head. I don't know why to this day, but the combination of this fart that could be heard in Beijing, and everyone was covering the rear, and the steam coming out of his head, I just couldn't look at him anymore. I just had to look away. I just was like that. And you know what's so great is that in America, when someone farts, people, you guys call it. You're like, come on, really, dude, you know? But in England, when someone farts, everyone sort of becomes very weird about it. They're all like, oh, looks like rain. Strange, but it's wonderful. But in this instance, it was so mammoth, it could be heard like three counties over. When he was done, there was like, you could hear a pin drop. It was just silence. And the whole crew went just dead silent. And Rob Reiner, the director, broke the silence and he goes, hey, Andre, you okay?
The way they did the projections on the buildings, where you can see the chimney sweeps do the step in time dance from Mary Poppins, where you see the lanterns from Tangled, just amazing. Honestly, I was spent more time looking at the projections on the buildings than I did the fireworks themselves.
Yeah, I saw some video of that, and I told Heather, so I don't know if I'd want to be watching the projections or the fireworks. I'd be just caught in the middle, just like, oh my gosh, look at this, but oh my gosh, look at that.
You need to see it three or four different times from different angles to appreciate everything.
Yeah, because I hear the Matterhorn gets turned into Mount Punahakalugi.
That's what I hear. I couldn't see it from my vantage point. I didn't see the Matterhorn, so I didn't experience that part. There's projections on Small World that I missed because I was nowhere near there. I could barely see Nemo flying in front of the castle. Tinkerbell and Nemo both fly in this show.
But first, I feel that we ought to congratulate Mr. Disney. You see, he won another Academy Award last week for his picture, The Country Cousin. Now, that's quite an honor, Donald. Besides, Donald, I want to whisper something to you, and this is very confidential. You know, your boss, Mr. Walt Disney, is really a wonderful artist. He's brought so much joy and beauty into the world through his creations. Of course, Donald. You've become a friend of everyone, too, children and grown-ups.
You've got a brand new book, and I've already read it. I ordered a copy, and it didn't take me too long to read. I just sped through it. But you and Will Ryan got together and wrote a book called Adventures in Oddity.
Yes, we did. As he'll say, it was 5 years in the making. But once we finally decided, hey, let's get this out, it came fast and furious. It was fun.
So it was kind of his idea to write this?
Well, actually, you see the picture on the cover of Adventures in Oddity?
Uh-huh.
I came across a picture about 8 years ago, and we actually took that photo about 30 years ago before we were ever on Adventures in Odyssey. I asked him to pose with me for some commercial headshots, photos, and we took that picture, and I found it, like I said, maybe 8 years ago, maybe, and I called him up. I said, Will, we look like Connie and Eugene in this picture. I was so, I was amazed when I saw it. I said, we got to send this to Focus. And he said, Focus on the Family. He said, no, save it for our book. I said, okay, what book? He goes, we're going to write one. I said, all right.
Somehow or another, I missed this. There was a vote for Disney Infinity 3.0 to have either an Olaf playable figure or Darkwing Duck. Now, had I known, I would have been on here and telling you all, Darkwing Duck. Everybody, quick, vote for Darkwing Duck. But I didn't know, and so we weren't able to act, and the Frozen Fanatics came out in droves, and Olaf has been chosen for Disney Infinity 3.0. Wow. What, the animatronics themselves, but not necessarily the outer appearance of them, I guess, was moved over?
That's correct. They were stripped of their costumes, and just the skeletons are used.
So there are actually naked characters from America Sings over at Star Tours.
Yeah, the G2 droids.
Just look at their feet. You can see that they're wet.
Yep.
Well, now that's interesting.
That's what G2 stands for, is they were formerly the geese.
Huh. Fascinating. All the interesting things.
Now, this might be a sad one for Paul, because I'm sure, like me, Paul loves Big Al. But I know that the animatronic for Big Al has been repurposed and is used in the Haunted Mansion Holiday.
Do you know what character he is now?
Oogie Boogie?
Yep, Oogie Boogie.
Tron ride. It's like a roller coaster, but you're riding on a light cycle. I mean, so many fun things. I mean, a Tarzan, and of course a big Frozen show, a big sing-along coming.
It's kind of bizarre. The late 70s, early 80s, you had Hanna-Barbera making cartoons of Batman and Superman, but you also had Filmation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Filmation Superman.
And so you had two different things, and the same kind of thing happened with Marvel, where they were having different companies making it, you know, so you have a lot of great cartoons, like, you know, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and all that.
Love it.
And, yeah, that's where I first saw Iceman.
Yep.
And all that.
And, of course, Firestar. Firestar. That's that was the beginning of Firestar, yeah.
Repulsive Blaster has joined the fight.
Awesome. So awesome. We're both synced together now. And now we have to sing to our power activator. So aim at me. Don't blast me.
Activator detected.
Can't see my laser. Is that...
He was an animator, he was a cartoonist, he was a movie maker, obviously a theme park operator. He was also an ambulance driver, a failed businessman. You know, he was involved in a lot of different ventures. And the argument that I really try to make is, if you take a look at his life and look backwards, particularly in relationship to his father and the way in which his father had worked at the 1893 World's Fair in Chicago, it seems pretty obvious that Walt at some point was going to build a place like Disneyland. But that doesn't happen until he's 53, 54 years of age. And again, it's only obvious looking back. And we see that in a lot of people's lives. Steve Jobs, in a famous commencement speech, talks about connecting the dots, but only connecting them backwards. And so, you know, my encouragement to the reader is to, again, keep moving forward and trusting that what you're doing today is going to take you to what you're supposed to be doing tomorrow.
So I took my favorite completed, drawn, lettered scenes from all those books and sent it out to editors. I said, hey, I got all these books coming out in the near future. Take a look. And I heard almost nothing, basically crickets for 13 months.
Ooh.
And then an editor at Marvel happened to flip through my packet and read some of the stuff and gave me an opportunity. Alejandro Arbona, he's not at Marvel anymore, but he gave me a shot on a Legion of Monsters miniseries in 2011.
Wow.
And while I was working on that, somebody quit X-Men Season 1. I'm not even sure who the original writer was, but they needed a writer right then, and I said I wanted more work. So, yeah, so my first two books were X-Men Season 1 and Legion of Monsters. And they did pretty well. The Season 1 books were successful, so they gave me another shot and another shot and another shot. And yeah, now it's my full-time job.
As long as it sells, yeah.
For me, they wanted him to be a farmer, a West Country farmer. It's not my scam genes. He's from, you know, what do they call it? Like, sort of Welsh almost. And they played this this hook for me, this one sentence that whenever we were shooting, I would say the sentence before we do the take, and it would put me back in the dialect of the character. And it was a recording from an actual farmer saying, "That's a nice shiny apple."
Starshood, we were concerned about you. Is our agent safe?
Safe, but perhaps a little shaken.
But sadly, Walt passed away about 5 months after the dedication. So even though it was a passion project of Walt and Roy, he couldn't really see it through and financially support it. So Disney backed away from all of Walt's auxiliary projects. Roy went off to build Disney World, which is exactly what he should have done because that was a really important thing to give to us.
Yeah.
And Marceline just lived in Midget Autopia, lived in Marceline, and was very popular, but the small town of Marceline literally couldn't afford the overhead and the maintenance to keep that ride going, and it shut down in 1977, which is incredibly sad.
But thankfully, they kept the cars because I love seeing that in the museum there. As somebody would walk into the museum and you go to the table and you buy your ticket there, but right over to your right, there is one of the cars just right there in like pristine condition, and there's photos from kids riding on it and from the dedication.
But there's a cow in the back of the shop, and me and Roger are doing a dialogue, and that's it goes, and action. So, I mean, okay, car, all right, fine, okay, take two, so anyway, all right, take three, I'm not joking, every single time we started the dialogue, this cow, nothing personal, started, you know, mooing, and so, I mean, that's on the outside, so a lot of little things like that was so much fun, so Roger was one of the fun ones I had to work with.
Oh, she's awesome.
And she plays Disney tunes on the bagpipes.
She's so awesome. So awesome.
Playing the Mickey Mouse song and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't remember the lady's name, but she's there every time. And the guy who always calls the parade is like, and here's da-da-da-da. And her goat.
Yes!
She's got her goat pulling a cart behind it with a little kid in it, as usual.
Yes.
So always there with a goat. Of course, there's a group that has, you know, horses, and they have their nice show horses mm-hmm. they come out with.
The Shriners show up.
No, the Shriners weren't there this year.
Oh, okay.
But they did have, of course, they have the typical boat full of little boys dressed as pirates.
Pirates, yep.
And the princess tea parties, you know, with all the little girls who've been made up earlier, and which they have the makeup thing going all day. Mm-hmm. But, and of course, they have, like, Miss Marceline, Miss Teen Marceline, and all that type of thing.
Yep.
And pageants you don't really hear much about, like Miss Outdoors Missouri and things like that.
Well, and a great thing about having a show where we talk about The Flash and having a series of The Flash is that the character itself, even in the comics, has just this rich history of a variety of villains, really interesting creative villains, you know, and sometimes people you would never expect. I mean, like the Trickster, you know.
Yeah.
This Rogues Gallery. So they have so many different characters that are really Flash specific, whereas you got your, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and even Arrow, where they're pulling villains from other franchises and other characters in the universes, in the comic universes.
So that was kind of neat. It kind of mixed things up, and so I really enjoyed it. And I am hopeful to see although the game is released in November, it will be before The Force Awakens comes out, but, you know, a few updates, a few, you know, extra downloads, and we might see some environments from The Force Awakens other than just, like, we already know Jakku is going to be a playable planet.
Right.
So, but maybe there'll be some other planets that will be added in, and maybe they'll have some downloadable extra heroes. Maybe you'll be able to play as Kylo Ren, you know, stuff like that. When you first, I saw Back to the Future 2 in the theater. Did you guys see that one in the theater at least?
Home release.
And you too, Eric?
Same here. Again, every time I saw a Back to the Future movie, it was home video.
So you guys had already heard that there was going to be a third one before you saw the second one probably, right?
I saw 2 and 3 on the same night.
Okay. Well, for me, I think I already maybe have mentioned this, but yeah, to have that cliffhanger ending, and then suddenly a big trailer for Back to the Future 3, I remember completely floored me. The thing is although I did see the first two movies in the theater, the third one I didn't see later until it'd been on video for probably a year.
All right, number three would have to be Mother Gothel.
That's a good one.
That is a good one. Is she the one that keeps you up at night?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah, you know. But then knowing that she fell out a window, which is also gruesome, but great.
To Disney and beyond.
All right, Neverlanders, this is going to be an epic conversation, I can tell you right now. Some of my favorite movies are the area in which this, our next guest, has worked in. We'll just put it like that. But we'll just start from the very beginning, and we'll just introduce everybody to Mike Quinn. Hello, Mike Quinn.
Well, hello. Thank you, Jeremy, and everybody, and all the Neverlanders out there. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I mean, I know that they struck a two-picture deal with Lou Grade for The Dark Crystal and The Great Muppet Caper. But Jim wanted to make The Dark Crystal. Lou Grade wanted to make the second Muppet film. So they struck up a deal, and it ended up being a back-to-back picture deal with the same company and the same, pretty well the same crew and everything too. So it was kind of cool. You know, we rolled straight from The Muppet Caper into Dark Crystal, and we're doing film tests at the end of shooting for Dark Crystal. So it was really neat. It was a lovely time, very creative. Golden era, really.
Yeah. And I remember when I first saw, I was very young when The Dark Crystal first came out. I remember when I was first seeing the trailers, it scared me to death.
Yeah, people say that, it's quite funny, but I guess it makes sense. I don't, you know, think of it as a scary film, but with it being so kind of real and dark and I guess it had that sort of gravity to it that I could certainly see, you know, how it could be really kind of creepy and strange to a young kid.
Yeah,
and it was the first thing like that. Yeah, the whole environment, the lighting, everything, and it was the first, all puppet creature film ever, really, and it was even before E.T., of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, all we'd had that was even close to that would have been Yoda and Empire Strikes Back, and of course the rest of that had, you know, he was with humans anyway, yeah. Luke and what have you. So, it was a new thing for everyone to get their heads around. So I could certainly see that, but mm-hmm. It's nice that films like that and even Labyrinth now, I guess once they reach that sort of 30-year status, they seem to become almost like cult films now. And,
yeah.
You know, have a cult pop, I should say, which is surprising, but it's actually really cool. You know, everyone worked so hard on these movies, and you, at the time you don't think, okay, what are people going to be thinking of these in 30, 35 years' time? No one can really, people don't think that far ahead when they're making a movie. I seriously doubt Jim was thinking, you know, oh, people are going to revere these movies, you know, three, four decades on. I don't think I seriously doubt he was thinking about that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's the scariness of the Skeksis that pulled me in, though, as well, because you had this epic journey of Jin to defeat the Skeksis, and so I really got behind it because, like, I completely understood the Skeksis as being these evil, tyrannical creatures that, I didn't know how it was going to end up in the end, but following Jin's journey to defeat them and save their world from the Skeksis, I could definitely get into, because they were scary, and especially the Garthim. The Gartham were frightening as anything, so...
Well, they were scary to us, too. I mean, yeah, when we were... I mean, those things were dangerous. Those blades they had on the claws, you know, we'd be down in the sets were raised, like, you know, 3.5-4 feet off the ground. So when we were doing the things like the Podling Village, you know, we'd be under there with our podlings on our arms, and the Gartham were breaking through the walls and chasing them through the fields outside and stuff, and... You know, we had to wear hard hats because we might get clipped with these things. One could have fallen over into the hole with us. And so it was kind of dangerous, really. It was kind of scary for us with all the breakaway walls and things that they had. So, yeah, the hazards of being on a set, definitely.
And the Podlings were definitely some of the more lovable characters. They always, especially in the scene where they're having their dinner and their little party and dancing. I don't know why, but it reminds me of something out of Fiddler on the Roof. And so I always related the Podlings to being, you know, like the Jewish people living in Russia at the time where there's that oppression, but they're just happy and, you know, having a rough life, but being happy and positive about it. That's why I love the Podlings.
Yeah, that's sort of the underdog in a way. And, you know, they didn't have a lot, but they kind of were. They're also more earthy, very earthy characters. So, you know, they're much more in tune with nature. And that was something that was very specific. Their instruments were made out of gourds and that kind of thing. All their clothes were very much natural silks and earth tones, like they've been dyed with berries and all that. So it was, it's a neat little thing. We built 50, I think. It was about 50 Podlings altogether. Some were some had blinks in them. Some had like little hand clappers and a few. There were a couple of marionettes that were built, but the rest were all just regular cast foam hand puppets. And so I was one of the guys that constructed those and the slaves as well. There were about 50 slaves. So there are 100 of each, 100 in total, I think. And I was working under Bobby Payne, who was one of the original Muppet Builder guys. He in fact, worked on Salmon Friends with Jim Henson. I think he even went to school with Jim Henson.
Wow.
So he was heading up the Podlings and Slaves and brought me in to help construct these guys. So it was a lot of work, but we ended up giving each one a name. Somewhere there's a list somewhere of all the names that these guys had. Like, I remember one was called Bertha D Nation and, you know, crazy stuff like that.
And in a strange sense of irony, you were actually the slave master, Skeksis.
Indeed, yes, which was total typecasting. Jim used to get such a juggle, he'd see me sort of in this. I had my 17th birthday on the set on Dark Crystal, so I was around 16, 17, and he'd be directing me, and I'd peek out from this evil character, you know, and there'd just be this young kid looking out, and he just thought it was the funniest thing ever.
Yeah, quite a juxtaposition to have the face out of these hideous vulture-like monsters.
Absolutely, yeah, he was great, though. He loved all that stuff.
Oh, and the challenge, though, of playing those characters, because all you had was a monitor to kind of that you could see what the camera was showing, and you'd have to try to figure out where you were from the camera positioning on the little monitor.
And it was very hard. I mean, you know, the monitor generated heat, too. I had one of the lighter costumes. I think mine was something like 70-something pounds. Some of the other characters were a lot heavier. So we couldn't really see out of the costume as such, not really, so... So you could look at the monitor, the one little 6-inch black and white tube monitor thingy, and but of course when the camera turned over, the technology was nothing was digital back then. So as the prism flickered through the lens, once the camera turned over, the image degraded quite a lot. So you sort of had this flickery, ghosty image of what you were performing to, and that was it. You know, so you had to remember that when you were performing. While it's this little tiny blurry thing on a screen, you're fighting to see where you are and what you're doing. When you look at dailies the next day on the big screen, you know, everything's the size of trees and a forest, and it's huge, you know. So you had to scale down your performance a whole lot on set and sort of compensate for that, which was really interesting. But also, you know, if they're shooting multiple cameras, we only saw the, you know, whatever camera feed we felt was relevant. So. It was quite a plus. We'd be walking around, hopping over cables and jumping on boxes. And I was, I think, the only performer who actually did some shots on my knees walking. They had, you know, little people in other rigs for when you see them full length walking around or running, and they were duplicate costumes. But I actually did some shots on my knees, which was the correct height for the Skeksis. I think I'm the only person who actually did that. So it worked quite well, but of course it's incredibly painful.
Yeah.
And might explain why my knees aren't working any longer, but it was worth it, you know, the movie. And
my goodness. Now, did they with each shot, did they have to limit the time that you were actually inside the full costume for the heat and stuff like that?
Yeah, they were very good about giving us fans and water, and when we had major setup breaks, they would get us out. We got pretty good at getting in and out of those things. It would take about two people to dress us, though, and lift them onto us and feed the cables and the head down onto us and strap us in, because once your arm was locked in there, that was it. You know, you were stuck, basically. So the longest I was in there was about 4 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I think the shot when we're looking up at the crystal and seeing the crystal bat reflected in there, looking at, for Jen and Kira, it was that whole scene. Yeah, that was the longest, though. But by that time, we were kind of used to it. You know, the very first scene we ever shot was the first time you see them in the movie going into the crystal, bedroom, the dying emperor's bedroom. And we were all in agony after that. It's like, oh no, what are we doing? We tried to rehearse and everything, but there's nothing like being on set and trying to pull it all together and shooting for days on end. So they had a massive scene, which helped. But I think after that, our bodies kind of learned, well, speaking of anyway, it sort of learned what it needed to do and how to be more economical with all the muscles and all that kind of thing. So it got a lot easier after a while. But yeah, it was still not an easy feat at all.
But worth it in the end. I used to, when I was home on summer vacation from school, that was almost religiously, I had to watch The Dark Crystal almost every day.
Wow.
For years. I watched the Dickens out of that movie.
Yeah, there's no Dickens left in there, I noticed. So you were the one that took it.
Apparently I was.
Come back with our Dickens. Stop that man.
And even so much that I remember when I found online that I could purchase a copy of the soundtrack, they did a limited release.
That's right, they did, didn't they, with extra music. Yeah.
Well, they had the original Trevor Jones scoring, and then they had where they lifted it directly from the film. You could tell on the second disc. It even had some unreleased music from a funeral scene that was cut. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, really, really good. Yeah, Trevor was great. Yeah, we worked quite closely with him on things like the pod dance, you know. I did some of the drumming work on that. So in the wide shot, when you see the drummer, it's me doing the drummer and the drumsticks. And then when they go into the close-up, Jim was doing the head, and Dave Goles was doing the two sticks. So it switches back and forth. But in the wider shots, it's me doing the drummer myself. We had to learn each drum beat. So he gave us a cassette back in those days. We had these things called cassettes. And on the left channel would be the music track, and on the right channel would be a count. So we'd know where we were in the count on the track as we were learning. So, you know, it'd be 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, that kind of thing. So, and we had music charts as well for those that could use that. So we actually learned every musical piece thanks to Trevor. So,
wow. Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
Become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPCast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/NeverlandPodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Glue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello, everybody, this is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast. We love you.
Yeah!